Okay, IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. And I'll include a link to the W3 community group, credentials community group site to join. And you need to ensure you have a W3 web account. This is free. And then lastly, the text of the community contributor license agreement is available at this location. Call notes, these minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the CCG GitHub meetings repo. And let's see, oh yeah, I guess the one other thing would be if you have something you want to say, you can add yourself to the queue. We actually use Zoom chat, not IRC, unlike the rest of the CCG calls. And you can just type Q+ in chat like that, and we'll call on you. Okay. Introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone new to the call that would like to introduce themselves? I think I see a bunch of regulars here, which is great. Would anyone like to reintroduce themselves? That's fine too. Okay, announcements and reminders. I don't really have anything. Does anyone have any announcements, reminders for the group?
Kim, I have one. I believe there is a T3 network kickoff May 25th for the new tranche of work that is going forward. So it's out there, and I will endeavor to put a link in the chat for that.
Thanks, Phil.
Kim, this is Simone. I don't know if it's a reminder, but just pointing out that last week we had a good chat in the DIFF program manager calls around the theme open badges are verifiable credentials, which is very connected to the topic that we're dealing with here. And I'll share the link to the recording in the chat. And then this Thursday in the IEEE ILR call, we are going to be addressing also another very related theme, which is the payload, quote unquote. So more on that later. Thanks.
Great. Okay, we made it through all the beginning stuff, which is great because we have a nice meaty presentation from Carrie. I'll include the link to it in chat. And I'll turn over to Carrie. Carrie, you should have permission to share your screen. And she will present the problem with payloads. And basically the timing of this is to help us make progress on the rest of the work. Carrie put a lot of effort into sort of aligning different definitions of or how we think about credentials. And so thanks, Carrie, for getting this together.
Sure. I'm unmuted right now, right? Oh, there I am.
Yes, I can hear you.
Morning, everybody, or afternoon, or early evening, I think, for some folks. I've been spending a lot of time thinking about, you know, what we're doing in this group and the work we're doing and the work that's come out of the LER. So what I did was I started putting together all of these notes, and then I wanted to like chunk these notes up into a way that made sense so I could like get to where I was trying to get to. And then I realized, well, I might as well just put it into a slideshow and then other people can see it too. And Kim suggested I bring this here today. I don't really think there's a problem with, by the way, the LER work at all. I'm a fan of alliteration. So I think it gets a lot of attention. So when I say the problem with payloads, I'm really just opening up discussion with some alliteration. Let me see here. You can all see my slides, right, Kim?
Yes, we can see it.
Okay. There is a ton of content in these slides. So the content is there. I'm going to breeze through the content primarily so we can get to this discussion at the end, which I think is more important than all of the slides before. So think of these slides as sort of a resource that we can get back to later, or you can read later. And also there are folks on this call who have way more knowledge about LER and also VCs. So if I have something wrong in here or something that you think should be updated, either let me know today or drop me a line so we can make these changes or go into the slides and add your own comments. That's totally fine. Okay, so what we're gonna go through is, so what is the LER and what are payloads? What are the self-contained education standards as payloads? I kind of made up that term, self-contained, and you'll see what I mean. What are some examples of education content standards as payloads? A comparison review of LER and VC, and then some VC edu assumptions that we've been making, I think, or that I've made. And we'll see if other people have made these too. And then some of the challenges we're facing with the education occupational payloads, and then discussion on how to go from here. And Kim, I'm not really going to be keeping an eye on the chat. So do you mind interrupting me if something comes up that I should stop for? Okay. So I took this content specifically right off of the LER LER wrapper and wallet document, which there's a link to at the bottom of the slide. So an LER is a digital record of learning and work that can be linked to an individual and combined with other digital records for use in pursuing educational and employment opportunities. And it specifies a universal cross-standards container for LERs to provide guidance to implement an LER using VC structure. And this creates an open architecture for any given domain to use and extend upon their use case. And essentially what this says in a nutshell is that it is an expansion of or extension of verifiable credentials in a way to insert what we're going to refer to in this call anyway as payloads, which are other standards that can fit inside of a verifiable credential, right? It's been this envelope approach. And the payload kind of goes inside the envelope of the VC and has its own properties to define it so that you can do things that support or make the verifying app understand what that payload might be. So the LER wrapper has the same properties as a verifiable credential, because essentially it is a verifiable credential, right? It requires a context and a type and a proof. It does have a credential subject, although it has an alias called a record. There is an ID in the subject, but it's referred as an alias of a POC ID. There is an issuer, it's called an issuer ID in the LER, and there's an issuance date, and the LER is a date. It also has some optional properties that are not in VCs, which is name, description, and image. So the LER record property, which is also the credential subject in a VC, contains this payload property, and the payload property requires type, and format and encoding, compression, encryption, and payload record, which is where the content of the payload goes. I do see that POC. I don't know what POC stands for in the LER POC ID.
Proof of control.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Also,
they contain multiple payloads. Oh, can you all hear me okay still? My headphones were going wonky.
Yeah, it sounds fine.
My Mac, hold on. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And maybe I should add some more context and proof of control. That is meant to enable the decentralized identifiers or any identifier that is amenable to proof of control. Like in authentication ceremonies where a relying party would give a challenge and ask you to sign control over some identifier that's in a credential. And then you could, sign a claim with the challenge and then the private key corresponding to that decentralized identifier or similar identifier.
Can would that be the case for, say, in a presentation, a verifiable presentation, that key would sort of map to that proof of control ID?
Commonly in a verifiable presentation for in the holder equals subject scenarios, the holder, well, this is for non-minimizing disclosure kind of signature suites. The holder ID would match some IDs that are subjects in the verifiable credentials in that presentation. I don't know if that may, diagrams might help there, but yeah, typically, so that's mm-hmm. meant to be holder versus subject, but frequently in the scenarios we're talking about, holder is the subject, except for things like, which I don't want to open this can of worms, like CLR. CLR is often not holder equals subject is what it appears in at that level of concern, but we'll get to that later, much, much later.
Yeah, and in fact, yeah, we probably won't get into the details of CLR or presentations either.
Right.
We're gonna stick to what we have here for now, because right. We can easily get down some kind of a rabbit hole there.
Great.
Okay. So here we are. We have this like LER, and it can have a payload. And the payload can have, there can be multiple payloads, and they have these required properties. And it sort of looks like this, right? So the payload is inside of the record. And then we have this payload type, the format encoding compression. So type, I think I have this defined sort of here in this next slide. I'll just stay there for a minute just to make sure folks can sort of see. This document is in the LER wrapper documents. I just pulled it from there. So you can go there and look at it later and read this section in detail if you weren't sure like what we're discussing today. So there's a few more details about the payload property. So it's intended to be compatible with any standard, whether it's you know, XML or JSON or JSON-LD or a PDF. And it can be encoded for transport. So it could be native JSON-LD. It could be multi-base, like Base64. It could be JSON. It can be compressed and then displayable and encrypted. Once again, there's a link at the bottom if you want to go to that section and look into that more. In this section, what I wrote about was what these payloads are, right? So some payloads are self-contained credentials, and they contain content that describes, say, an achievement. I'm going to use like words loosely here, but achievement, an issued instance of that achievement, and also how it's verified. Some contain only like content description or reference competencies or skills, but they're not the actual instance of the credential. And some contain an array of, some payloads contain both, right? They contain content descriptions and some issued instances, and especially if there's like multiple payloads. And as I said in the previous slide, there's varied formats and multi-formats. And in some cases, all of this is combined, which, the reason why I started going through all of this, by the way, to the folks who are on the call, is that if I'm building a verification app or a wallet or something that wants to understand this, it's a lot to wrap my head around. Right? If I am new to this, I'm like, wait, what is all of this stuff and what does it all mean? And how do I do something with all of this data? Which is what we really want to encourage in the long term, right? Okay, so some examples of self-contained standards. These are the some, right? These are the three that I know of the most. One is IMS Global Open Badges, which is JSON-LD, and it's a single issued instance, typically. IMS Global CLR, which is an array of issued instances from one or more issuers. And the instant issuers may be different from the CLR publisher. Some of those instances could be open badges. And then I have PESC down here, which is a single transcript per issuance. I don't know that much about PESC. I'm going to pause here for a second. Let me see. Jim, do you have a second to talk about PESC if I ask you a couple of questions? If not, we can come back to it.
I assume you mean Jim Kelly.
I do. I'm sorry. Yes. I didn't look at the participants list. Sorry. Okay. What I do understand is that there is a JSON-LD group working in PESC. And I don't know the standing of that, but I'm going to include it on this self-contained list for now. And we can get to that at some other point.
Yeah, I've been plugged in a little bit into that, and there will eventually be a JSON-LD version of the transcript, test transcript. I'm not sure when that will be, but they're working on it.
So I realized I was on mute. I'm sorry.
Okay.
This is Jim Kelly. Yeah, I'm here and I'm listening. I'm trying to talk. There is a JSON group meeting. It's very active right now. We're pulling in resources to help us better understand, make some choices on JSON-LD versus JSON and what those use cases and advantages and disadvantages might be. So that's happening right now to try and move the JSON ball forward with PESS. And we're looking at a wide variety of things right now, so trying to take a complete approach to how we think this is going to get used going forward. So that's happening right now. Obviously, there is the existing XML standard, which has been in place for many years and is fairly robust and mature. So you had a question mark about single transcript per issuance.
Yes. You know what I meant by that? That's sort of a note to me, Jim, but it was more about, I guess what I'm referencing there is the group looking into doing a sort of a VC native version of PESC, where maybe the student information is more in the verifiable credential or in the subject, and then say the PESC is the rest of the content about the achievements or the transcript?
We haven't been looking at that. We have been looking at this purely as a payload, but that's an interesting idea. So when you say single issuance, a transcript can include multiple achievements. It could include, multiple degrees or multiple, so the transcript can be more than just a single thing.
Okay.
So
I think it'd be great if some week we do a call about PESC, we can all understand it a little bit better, if that's okay.
Okay, well, I might have to pull in someone with a little more payload expertise on that, but
all right. That'll be great.
Education expertise, but I'd be more than happy to arrange that.
Great, awesome. Well, I'll drop you a line about it. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, so these are a list of some of the education content standards as payloads, and I pulled this list out of the LER. List, but I know that there's more than this, but these are some of the ones that are included in that document. Okay, so now we're going to just talk a little bit, or I'm going to talk a little bit about differences. And this is where, like, if I got anything wrong, please feel free to chime in and let me know. Okay, one has to do with payload and claim properties. So the LER wrapper has the record payload. It has those properties that describe the type, the format, encoding, compression, and encryption. But the VC credential subject assumes JSON-LD. It does not have implicit properties to explain formats. It's very loose, but it allows the flexibility for a context file to be provided to explain these properties. And as I noted, after all, like LER is a verifiable credential and it has its own context file that does this. And Kim, can you take a second just to explain how the aliases work? I didn't really put anything in here about that yet.
So actually I'll dig up some links to share it. Effectively, the way that the LER standard did it was use JSON-LD to alias or kind of rename some fields. But this context defines this context link right here, the T3LERV1, describes some mapping to those names to verifiable credential data model names so that it's the same in terms of RDF graph terms, but it looks different. So You'll see a verifiable credential record, you'll see an at context can be an array at the beginning of the file. And so by pointing to this, that's what enabled them to sort of rename record to rename credential subject to record and things like that. And so the ability to do that comes from the JSON-LD spec. It's kind of obscure. I don't think that it wasn't clear if the people behind JSON-LD verifiable credentials were especially happy that we came up with this clever idea, but there you have it.
Awesome.
Could I just interject that there were some good reasons from the standpoint of the LAR work group for doing this, that, and we did discuss, do we really want to alias things, but it was important to those participating that we given the impression that this is broader kinds of records than credentials. So using terms like record sent that signal.
That makes sense. Thanks, Jim. Okay, go on to the next one here. Oops, sorry about that. Okay, issuer. You'll notice I have a star at the bottom to pin for later, because I've been talking about this with Anthony. He brought up some concerns about issuer, and I just want to make sure we didn't get into those now so we can move on, but I do think we need to talk a little bit more about what issuer means in terms of verifiable credentials in education, especially in terms of, we have publishers too. So the LAR wrapper does not imply that the LAR issuer is the same as the issuers contained in the payload. So for those self-contained standards like a CLR or a badge, there could be conflicts or misunderstandings because you can, if you put in a full badge or a CLR in there, they could have different issuers. It would be very hard for a consuming application to really understand which is which. And then VCs imply there's one issuer for all of the claims that might be in a credential subject. And some of the self-contained standards like the CLR do contain records that have different issuers, like I'd said above. And then there's the differences between recipient and learner approach. So for the LAR wrapper, a record is issued to a single individual and learner. And there may be multiple payloads, but only one record that's really associated with that POC ID, which is a learner, now I know proof of control ID. A VC credential subject actually may contain claims about more than one individual. In VC Edu, we've talked about not doing that. But it's possible to do that. A verifiable credential can be issued to more than one person at the same time. And then revoking. So I could not find anything in the LAR documentation that mentioned revoking in terms of the credential status, which is a verifiable credential property. I assume it could use that if it wanted to, because it is a verifiable credential. And then but the VC does have that credential status that can be used to see whether or not a VC is suspended or revoked. Jim Goodell, do you want to say anything about revoking in LAR stuff, in the LAR work?
I don't recall the discussion about that, but I'm sure that we didn't, I'm sure that that was something that we didn't want to exclude.
Jim, I recall that discussion as kind of something that we thought we didn't have time to get into, but I guess I could be wrong. It wasn't that my memory of it is that we wanted to, that we didn't have the time to work it through completely, and that we wanted to push it off and let the standards organization who picked it up later handle it.
That sounds right. Okay. So I think you're right, Carrie, that the group didn't do anything to exclude that the concept of status, but we didn't want to explicitly. It sounds if Jim's right, we didn't want to explicitly say here's how you handle status in revoking.
Okay, cool. Thank you. I wanted to just clarify my understanding of where all of that stood. So that's very helpful. Okay, those are the different major differences that I could find. There aren't really that many, right? I made a list of assumptions. I'm gonna go through these and you feel free to jump in, anybody, and correct me on these. This is about VC edu, not VCs. Not about LERs. This is just sort of, if we were just looking at VC edu without LER and we were thinking about what we were doing with the verifiable credential for education. So number one is that it's intended to be a verifiable instance of a single awarded issued education or occupational credential. That it must have only one issuer identity, although that identity could represent more than one issuer. That's come up, right? It did could represent a group of issuers, a consortium of some kind. I'm making that up, but I think that use case came up at some point. Third, it must have one recipient identity. That's what we had decided at some point in VCEDU. I don't know if it's documented, but I'm pretty sure that that's what was decided at some point. However, that identity, the recipient identity, could be more than one person, just like with the issuer. It could be a group, right? It did could be a group. A URL could represent a group. I've had instances in open badges where an email represented a group, believe it or not. number four, a claim within the credential subject must contain only one achievement or one payload, as we've been talking about those. But a VC edu credential may contain more than one claim. So the claim has only one achievement, but it can have multiple claims. And this is an assumption that the claims are made by the same issuing identity. The claims have been issued to the same identity. You can ignore C. That's a note that I don't know what I was saying there. And D, if one claim is revoked, they're all revoked. So if the credential status, you know, like someone clicks on a URL with the credential status and it's gone, then it's gone for, you know, all of them are gone at the same time. And then six is just a reminder note that we have been looking at this has credential property, which has one value. It's the schema.org property. It has one value, which is educational occupational credential. Which looks very much like a content description, right? It's not about the instance, it's more global definition about the credential. Okay, so some challenge. Should I pause?
On the previous slide, yeah, yes. Phil mentioned C, probably it's just issued on the same date, and that's good to call out.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Issuance date from the outer thing, which, yeah. So how do those dates all work together?
I don't know why, but you know, honestly, you look at something like a million times and you miss still something. Yes, that is exactly what I meant. You're right. Thank you. Okay, we're almost done getting through these steps. We get to the discussion part. Okay, so some of the challenges, we've already gone through these really. Some payloads are self-contained credentials and they contain everything, the content, issued instance, and the verification. And this is a challenge for VCs and LERs because the VCs really are the instance, right? They're like the envelope that describes the instance itself. The second one is that some contain an array of both content descriptions and issued instances. So that's like a CLR, for instance, or possibly like a past transcript. And this means we have problems because there isn't a verifiable instance between the relationship of the issuer and to the claims. And then lastly, the varied formats and the option to contain multi-formats. And this is a challenge for VCs because VCs are structured to only be in JSON-LD and don't really have these properties to describe these varied formats on their own, unless we're using the LER context to have those properties. Okay, here we are, discussion. I made it. Okay, so I have an idea that I just want to bring to the group first, and then if we agree, we can move on to the next slides. And this is to work on the self-contained payloads first. And that includes open badges, and then CLR, and then PESC, as far as we can get while they're doing their work in parallel. And then get to the work that we've kind of been doing all along, which is back to VC Edu credentials that aren't self-contained payloads, and how much we will lean on LERs and that work. And the reason for that is this, is that the self-contained payloads already have their own verification methods, right? And we can't change that in VC Edu. Like, they are what they are in those standards. They verify the way they do. Ideally, we hope that self-contained standards would create VC native versions without having their own verification methods, because that way we can really use the other valuable properties of those standards and let the VCs handle the verification aspect. But in the meantime, if we want to really get out the VC versions of these, of things like open badges and CLRs, then we're going to just make some compromises to get that happen. And then we can move on to the other work. I think that if we stall here for too long, then it's really hard to get other things done. And there's a lot of people who are already using these standards and trying to implement them as VCs and are really struggling with it. And then my bigger suggestion here, and this is where we get to the deeper discussion with all of you, is start with open badges. And that's because it's the simplest, because CLR is based on open badges, and because PESC is, they're busy working on the JSON-LD version right now. And so what I put together in these slides are five different approaches that have been discussed at some point or another about doing these, about doing open badges as JSON-LD. Let's see, how should we go about this part, Kim? Should I open up each one maybe and we can look at them?
Yeah, that would be good.
Okay. So this first approach, is the LER wrapper. Let me open this in a new tab, approach. This is one that I honestly have the least amount of experience with. And Kim, maybe you have more knowledge about this one than I do because it's in the model.
I think, let's see, probably Nate would be the most authoritative on the, think sort of drove a lot of the open badge based examples here. Nate, do you mind?
Sure. So I can briefly talk to this one, which is that.
Wait, sorry, Nate, before you get started, you know what? Maybe you'll want to talk to the first three, if you don't mind.
I think did you jump to number four?
No. I'm still on one. So
okay, let's talk about number one then.
All right.
Number one is you saw Carrie talk a little bit about the aliases that were present in the LER context that appears here up at the top, and so this is essentially a claim that it uses that vocabulary to and open badges as the value. So the payload is a piece of JSON-LD, which it, you see the payload type, alumni JSON-LD 3.0, application LD plus JSON, and then the data is the JSON of the actual assertion. So where you see the data line all the way there through the curly brace that sort of closes the badge, that just is an open badges 2.0 blob of JSON. And I believe at the top, if this is done correctly, that would mean that the context for open badges appears somewhere. So I don't see the context. So things like the badge property. Yeah, so if this were done correctly, there would be the open badges context would probably appear within the data payload or the payload data section. So
okay.
that would probably
what happened with this was I think that we were having problems loading a we were actually reusing these contexts across something else that was using them in code. And we were having problems loading the open badge context. So it just got removed. So it should be back there. So yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely no criticism of how this came together or whatever, just so people can understand what it would mean to embed JSON-LD inside a payload is you'd have that context.
Essentially this is like an open badge within the LER wrapper recommendation. That's the intention of this one. Does that make sense, Nate?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Nate, you still there?
Yeah, sorry. I muted myself. Exactly right.
Okay, good. Okay, well, I listed some pros and cons here to this approach, so we could discuss it. This is not a finite list of pros and cons. It's what I came up with. The pro is that it can contain all the assertion and badge class properties. So all of the data could be accessible in that envelope of the VC. Cons is that it's pretty complex. It's unclear of the role of the issuer of the VC and the issuer of the badge assertion. There's a question of how the POC ID resolves with the badge recipients. And I don't know why I put this in there because it's clearly a VC, but I also listed, is this a VC or a verifiable presentation? And maybe because there's some confusion as to what that is. Okay, option two. Nate, I'm going to call on you for this one too. So this is one of the first approaches to an open badge as a verifiable credential. This is also currently in the modeling doc, and I believe also in the Reboot Web of Trust paper and in open badges issues.
Yeah, okay, so this one, the credential subject area, the idea is that it has an ID of a credential subject here, a DID. And then there is a property, and we've been talking a lot about schema.org's has credential property that makes the claim that this recipient has met the criteria of a particular defined achievement. So they have the credential that is a badge class. And that means that the outer VC itself is functioning in the same role as the open badges assertion. And in fact, you see the ID of the VC is example.com/assertions/1001, essentially saying this is the assertion, this entire thing. And then it has an issuer, it has a type, it has a credential subject. The claim, the essential claim that the assertion makes is that the subject, the learner, has met the criteria of a defined achievement and therefore has a credential.
Excellent, thank you. That you will see when we get to number three of the options that we have so far. It looks very similar to this one. The pros of this is it's much less complex, right? It has the ID that references the assertion. The cons is that it doesn't contain VC proof in the example, but I think that just might be what the example is right now. Or it might be relying on the assertion, but that might just be how the example is set up. Also it links to the assertion. So it's positive it's that it has an ID of the assertion, but it also links to the assertion. And if the data doesn't match, then, you know, there may be some misaligned values between the two. Next one is 2B, which is also another approach to an open badge as a verifiable credential. And Nate, one more here for you, please.
All right. I have the added challenge of these are the first times that I've actually clicked these links in a few months. So I'm quickly grokking it and presenting it at the same time. So
you're doing
this
great.
One, oh yeah, indeed. Actually, this looks really similar. What is the difference here? I see schema has credential to a badge class again. See everything, all the distinguishing things.
Seem that very, is. Very
oh wait, that is the same one. Sorry.
Okay.
Let me pull up the right.
This
one.
Was a. You folks, you see that I passed.
This
the pop
was
quiz.
A test.
Trick question.
Just having a little fun with you, Nate.
So this one is different, and it is overall a verifiable credential, and. It has an issuer, an issuance date, issued on, et cetera. This one also actually has the open badges assertion content mixed in here somewhat duplicatively with the verifiable credentials content. So you see that the type at the top of this file is a verifiable credential, comma, assertion, meaning that it is both an open badges 2.0 assertion and a verifiable credential. And so you see like issuance date and issued on. Issuance date comes from the VC vocabulary and issued on comes from the open badges vocabulary. The recipient
component comes from the Open Badges vocabulary, and it identifies a recipient of type email with a particular identity. The credential subject comes from verifiable credentials and is basically exactly as we had just looked at. In this case, it looks like schema has achieved instead of has credential. I don't think that any material difference between the last example and this one in terms of which schema.org proposed term would be selected as material here. But then you also see below the credential subject area, there's the badge property, which is the Open Badges way of identifying which defined achievement has been conferred. And then there's a proof, which is the VC method, and a verification property, which is the Open Badges method. So this is a interesting Franken hybrid, a piece of JSON-LD that is both a valid verifiable credential and a valid Open Badges assertion that makes the same claim at the cost of some duplication.
Excellent. And Franken hybrid is an excellent way to call it. We should rename it as that later. Some of the pros and cons are just what Nate just said, that it contains pros. It contains all of the assertion and badge properties somewhere in the envelope. And it could also be verified as a hosted assertion in addition to the VC. But it duplicates the properties, it duplicates the verification. Also, once again, like the other one, it links to a hosted assertion. So it has this potential for misaligned values. And also, I don't have it on here, but it is much more complex. And there's a lot of like potential for like errors and typos and things between the duplicate properties. Okay, so this next one has not been proposed yet. This is three. This is one that I talked to Juan, who I think is on the call, and Wayne on Friday. And we sort of talked about this approach, which is very close to 2A, the first approach of Open Badges. And I'll discuss this one. So essentially what it does is it says, it puts the information of the badge in here. So it has the badge class. And by the way, this is not good. I don't know if this is correct. I ran it through the payload, but that's not like critique JSON-LD. Mostly it's just be illustrative. So it has the badge class information and it does reference the assertion. What it doesn't do is duplicate things like the date and the issuer and the verification, the proof. It assumes that the verifiable credential is the instance and that the badge class information is the content, but it does include the assertion so that if the verifier wanted to go retrieve the assertion, they could. That is the main difference between that one and the other. So it's very close to 2A. Except that it contains, I believe it contains, what's the difference? There's a difference, I can't remember right now, sorry. Oh, I know what it is. It's instead of including ID up here for the assertion, the link to the assertion, it actually includes assertion within the credential subject. That's really the only difference between this and 2A. So the pros for this is that it contains all the verifiable credential properties to verify the VC. It contains the badge class and the assertion data. The wallet, so this is what came up in the discussion with Wayne and Juan, is that wallets don't need to understand how to go retrieve and understand a badge. It has the data right there. And if that's all they want to display, that's what they can display. And then what it does is it puts the verification on gives the onus to the actual verifier of the credential from the wallet, not to the wallet itself. If the wallet wants to, they can verify the hosted assertion, but they don't need to. But once again, like the other ones, the cons is that it links to a hosted assertion that it could be different. It could be that by the time the verifier looks at the credential, it's in the wallet, things have changed on a hosted assertion. Okay, and this last one, this one was my, and now I look at it and it seems a little silly, but we should pretty much talk about it anyway. This is the very simplest approach. This doesn't include anything except it says who the recipient is and it gives a link to the assertion. And it says, hey, everybody, here's a verifiable credential. It goes to this person. It's been issued by this issuer. Here's how you can prove it. And if you want any of the other data, then just go pull it out of the assertion. This is probably the laziest approach. And, you know, I'm a lifelong web developer pretty much at this stage. So this is the approach that I took. I still kind of like it, honestly, but I think it puts a lot more work on the wallets than we want to do. And that's that. So those are the total five approaches. So what I was wondering is, what do folks think about any of these approaches? What other approaches are we missing? And then what are next steps? So it came from there. I just sort of want to open it up to discussion, I think, now.
Yeah, so everyone, feel free, please add yourself to the queue. I wanted to start with something, Carrie, on the lazy approach, like the last one. I think that has advantages in the drift. We can do something with that just by, say, like content integrity hashes of the linked content, something like that. So, you know, there are ways to make sure that they, or at least if they do drift, that it can be noticed. And yeah, I don't know. I sort of like that in terms of people's ability to just get started with that. I'll moderate or run through the queue. Keith, you're up next.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So I've been following this work for a while, and I think my perspective always is, I think we do a good job of looking at it from the issuer or the holder perspective. I'm always very curious how this is going to work from the verifier perspective. So let's say someone has like 100 badges in their wallet representing all sorts of different things. I mean, the nice thing about the VC architecture is like presentation exchanges is I can say, please give me all of your course badges or all of your degree badges. And, you know, and that's supported through things like common schemas in the VC world. But that kind of breaks down when you talk about badge classes, just the way that open badges are designed, that every issuer has different badge classes. So I just think maybe my feedback is we don't look at these problems enough from the verifier perspective, how this fits in with the standards like presentation exchange, where you can do things like selective disclosure, things like that. Or maybe I'm just missing something. I guess that's one of my feedback.
That's totally true, Keith. And we do need to do more of that. Across the board, I don't think we do that enough in credentials. I think one of my goals was to get some verification use cases in our list, but I haven't gotten to that yet. I would like to look at this from the approach of the verifier, though. Like, if you're an application that is trying to absorb this data, consume this data, you know, what is easiest? And also, by the way, I think all of these solutions are interim, right? I don't think this is forever. I think this is what we look at for now. And right now, there isn't that much verification going on, unfortunately, but I think we should still keep that angle as a critical one.
Definitely. Let's see. We have Phil next. He wrote it out. So wait, can you read that? Phil Barker.
Yeah, it was just a simple question that, you know, these are all looking at the special cases of open badges, but you know, we'd like to have something, I think, that's generalizable to other cases. So, you know, my question is, which of these approaches do you think is the most generalizable?
I don't know. I mean, the last one really is as general as you can get, really, in terms of an open badge, right? That could be anything.
Yeah, and everyone, feel free to add yourself to the queue if you have.
Yeah, if others have answers to these questions, yeah, please jump in.
Adrian, you're up.
Hi, sorry I only come to these very occasionally, but I love this conversation because I am a broken record in the community saying that we have to elevate the authorization component of the protocols that we're using. And the discussion we're having about the difference between self-contained and hosted credentials in the real world is exactly the discussion that I think we should be having in the broader context because of everything that's been said so far. So in other words, I do not consider the fact that there could be a mismatch between the self-contained and the hosted thing to be a bug. I consider it to be a feature. The bug is that we as a community are combining the control layer with the data layer, and this is not sustainable. And I think the presentation today shows why we need to design for separating the control or the authorization layer from the data layer while using the VCs and DIDs and everything else. Thank you.
Thank you. I agree.
Thanks, Adrian. Let's see, Nate is on the queue next.
I think Phil's question about what's most generalizable from these examples is a great one. And I also really want to elevate what Carrie mentioned is we should be thinking about these options from the perspective of the verifiers, those who need to consume this data and need to write software that will grok it and implement whatever verification components are necessary in order to get the full meaning of the claim. At its core, Open Badges assertions make a claim that we've been talking about in this group a lot, which is the has achieved or has credential claim. And so if I were going to answer the question about which of these approaches is most generalizable, I would definitely lean toward the approaches that use the claims like that, where we have a credential subject that identifies a credential by or a recipient by a DID or some other form of IRI identifier, and then makes a claim that that recipient subject has met the criteria and has been conferred a credential definition. That works for all Open Badges claims as well as others. I've been taking a look at some of the other properties that are like sort of present in IMS CLR around how we might specifically do the other use case that's been really close to my heart, which is a skill claim that any issuer might make. And I think that can be accomplished in a very similar manner to this using some properties from the CLR, which is around like a result, the idea that there's a result description in the defined credential and a result in the credential itself. But that's getting a little bit off track. Which approach is most generalizable, specifically from the perspective of a verifier? I think the has credential type claim is the one that best stands the test of time. And I'm really excited that we have so many implementers in the Open Badges community that are thirsting for VCs, that we might really be able to get some pilots or something off the ground where we do a coordinated approach to achieve these Open Badges use cases pretty soon.
Thank you. And yes, I was actually, so we have Adrian on the queue twice. I was going to ask as well, because I think Adrian, you just described it in a way that made it clearer. I think I've wanted to sort of reduce drift, but as long as it's clear, as long as the schemas sort of separate who's responsible for what, I mean, that's great with me. It's just not, it's not been clear to me until now, which part the VC is responsible for on that issuer field versus whatever else. So I was just wondering if you can, we'll queue up Adrian for a few comments that he has.
Well, it's really just one comment, and it is the answer to Brent's. In my solution, if you would, or my perspective is that the subject needs to be always be given the choice, both at issuance and at verification, of saying, I want a self-contained or a hosted credential or both. And the issuers and the verifiers can choose to only respect one of those options. But by separating the control from the content layer, that is what I mean, is do not by design presume that it has to be one at the issuer or the verifier level, that it has to be one or the other. Always give the self-sovereign subject the choice first.
Right. And I guess just a note on that. So the idea is, which seems like a path that we had been okay with all along, if we're just saying the issuer is, you know, issuing this or making this claim about a subject, just keeping it very VC data model, then what you're calling the content, that can have its own, sort of trust implications based on whatever reference schema that that wants to use, which we're not, I think like that's the part that we're saying might vary per different target schema that we're using here. We're not forcing one understanding on all of these, which I think has been some of the what's bogged us down in the discussion so far, is trying to push everything out to the VC issuer layer. I don't know if that's accurate though, but just in terms of like, what is that issuer and you know, sort of how does it relate to the payload?
Do you think that is, I put in the chat that I think this is what we've come close to with versions 2A and 3.
Yep.
Is that correct?
I think so. I need to look at them again. P1, you're up.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to, express that the having the perspective of both the verifier and the holder and looking at things from those different lenses, I think is really important. We've really concentrated on the issuer to date, which I understand, but when it comes to the issue of drift, is the concern I have is that the holder needs to know if a credential they're packaging and sending to a relying party has in fact been invalidated or not. I like the idea of separating out those two, but there needs to be a way for the holder to get a relatively instantaneous notification that something that they're holding has changed. And so I just want to make sure that we do take that step back and look at each of the examples from those three parts.
Yeah, and Carrie, we'll close with you, Carrie.
Oh, yes. So I was going to say that the drift is one of my biggest concerns, and I agree with separating the authentication from the content, except that the recipient could never know if the hosted values change. So they wouldn't necessarily be able to know which one to share that has what they want in there, which is actually how I got to the very last concept, which was just to present the assertion, which makes it harder for the wallet, but you know, does present, I think separates the two simply and potentially prevents, you know, them getting unsynced. Sorry, so we're at noon. Kim, I'm thinking, I'm wondering if all of you could sort of review these, if you can get to the slides and review them this week, and next week, maybe we can really just discuss these examples again and see if we can reach a consensus on which way we'd like to go, if we're ready to do that by next week.
That's great. Thank you so much, Carrie, and have a great week, everyone.
Okay, thank you, everybody.
Very well, good. Very nicely done.
Thank you.